meditating. So the Noble Eightfold Path begins with right understanding, and then from that, that leads to Sammasankappa, right intention. Why you're doing what you're doing and how you're doing it, right? So if you have wrong understanding, then of course you can try very hard, but you won't get the result that the Buddha suggested you can get. So I've just been talking about right understanding. So now we can watch the breath, or whatever object of meditation you like. The most succinct, like usually when you see right understanding, you assume it's a kind of intellectual package. You get that all sorted in your head, and then you have right understanding. Yeah, that's one way. But also right understanding is that this moment is like this. Right? It's like this. That's right understanding. You understand this moment experientially rather than as a intellectual construct or as a analysis or as a judgment, or it's like this. Right understanding. And that's a silent understanding rather than a verbal description. So if I say it's cold, yeah, to me it's cold, but maybe to you it's not cold. There's nothing wrong with that verbal description, but cold is like this. Right, so that's very simple. Lumpa Samedo's summation after 50 years of practice is, it's like this and it all belongs. 50 years of practice. And there's something about it, the more you practice, the more you appreciate the elegance of a simple truth. I think scientists do that, don't they? They try to get their formula really elegant and simple. There's something about that. It all belongs. It's a difficult one because then people take it like it's some kind of social statement that it's all like a fatalism. It all belongs. Yeah, I'm hopeless. Or a statement of approval that violence is okay, but it's not coming from that perspective of social justice or social institutions or in that kind of sense. It's more like an existential statement. It all belongs because it's all part of nature. So even if I feel upset by something, it's still natural. But it doesn't mean I don't do anything. It doesn't mean I don't respond to it in a way that's skillful. So then you have the second part of the teaching. What are the causes and conditions now that I can engage in, which will lead to a peaceful result? But if I don't begin with just the simple, it's like this, and I come at it from a habitual way of, it shouldn't be like this, I shouldn't be like this, you shouldn't be like this, or a habitual looking for some other than this, then that very attitude, if I don't see it, is not awakened attitude. I'm not awakened to that very kind of bias that I'm applying to the present moment, right? So it's like this, and it all belongs. Now, when you apply that, I would say, statement of awakening to the present moment, then you can see, so what's the resistance? What's the problem? Why am I suffering? What's the cause of suffering? What's the end of suffering? So you can make effort. You know, you can make effort. You can make the causes for peace. So if I'm feeling really disgruntled about something, first of all, I have to say, oh, it's like this. I feel or there is disgruntlement. It's better to not include yourself in this. Like Ajahn Sumedho's book, Don't Take It Personally. Don't take your life personally. And what does that mean? It's not a dismissal of feeling sad or happy or disgruntled or excited. It's just seeing that sense of disgruntlement or whatever arises because of a cause. It's not your fault. It's just the way nature works. It works in these flows. And then there's the awareness. And so on one hand, yeah, we want to be happy and harmonious people. But on the other hand, we also, I think, are hungry for some spiritual dimension where we're not always having to fix everything all the time. That's so tiresome, isn't it? Always having to make yourself perfect. Is anyone winning? it's a loser's game. So that's a relief, isn't it? That, you know, that perfection is simply an ideal. But this moment is perfect, in a sense it is as it is. But if I just take that as fatalism and then, well, yeah, I'm not a good meditator, you know, give me the cocaine. that's not right effort. So what I've been stressing is trying to get the mind to that sense of awakening, which is silent, and keep returning to that pre-verbal way of knowing. Now, like right now, I have no strong emotions running through my consciousness, so it's all very neutral. The most exciting thing are those fan blades. Right. Ooh. And so it's pretty easy to say, oh, it's like this. And then to abide in that silence. It's quite easy to do, isn't it? Because I'm not looking for anything. I'm just awake to truth. The truth of the moment is like this. And it's very important that in those times of, call it, say, neutrality, non-pressure, to come to that. Because in those times of nothing's happening, the mind just trips out because it likes to do that. You know, it doesn't like silence, it seems. It's bored. So it just goes blah, 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 but whatever. It's not proud. You notice that? It'll just run on about anything. So that requires effort. It requires effort to come to that awakening. But it's not the effort to become, it's the effort to know. And that is always possible, no matter what the situation. So if in those, as I say, times of neutrality, you can encourage in your own practice, make the intentions to really use the times where you're not stressed, when it's very, very ordinary, to come to the awakened mind. Then that creates a force of awakening in consciousness. So if you're in a traffic jam on the 401, let's say the 401 on a Labor Day Friday, can you think of anything worse? And like, you know, the traffic's backed up to North Bay or Kingston and you're sort of in the middle of it and you're not driving, right? Now, if you keep looking at the cars and looking at your clock, you just get more and more uptight, right? The driver, you know, that's their practice. But if you're a passenger, you can't close your eyes and not look at the traffic. You can't choose to not stimulate your mind negatively by thinking about the 401 and how horrible it is in Toronto and I wish I wasn't here and I want to live, blah, 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 blah. That's something you're doing, right? That's something I'm creating around a situation. But traffic jams like this. Don't approve of it. Move if you want. Perth is a good place to live. So on and so forth. But right there, that actually it's pretty neutral if you're not the driver. If you're the driver, okay, you have to deal with that. So then you know, this is the idea of a meditation practice being 24/7. You say, hey, I'm really getting kind of tense with all this. Then put on a podcast. Better to listen to the Grateful Dead, even anything. But rather than letting your mind go, no, so much traffic. And that's the way negativity works. It keeps focusing on the negative. Now, to take your attention off the negative is not repressive. It's coming, I mean, it might be, but it's just coming from, yeah, with this visual image as condition, there is tension. Well, what if I do something? Well, what if I don't look there? What if I look here? And that you can do all the time. That's a very simple skill, but it's very, very profound. But it's coming from trying to awaken the mind to the way things are and then seeing resistance, becoming, and then distraction or preoccupation, seeing those things and coming to that clarity of presence. That will always take you to the transcendent, to the knowing, and realizing change. But some conditions are just so compelling or confusing, you have to kind of get into a different ballpark if you can. Get your attention away from there. I don't subscribe to the theory that, oh, because it's hurting you, it's good for you. I think that's daft. Oh, I really need more pain. Any more pain and I'll be dead. You know, that's just an absolute. Sure, it's good to be pushed and shoved a bit, and you know, but to think that just because a life is horrible that this is going to be a learning experience, not necessarily. It might be a burning experience, right? So those kinds of heroic absolutes are simply positions that the mind takes from culture or personality. But you know, how is it? How is it now? And what could I do? So retreat is good. That's why we're here. You don't always have to battle and advance and do those kinds of things. Retreat is good. But sometimes you have to. Sometimes you just have to grow through difficulties. Sometimes there is no choice. This is life. Anyway, so now we can do breath meditation. We're finally ready. So with the with meditation, there's a myriad of objects you can choose. Some people don't like breath meditation because somehow they get too constricted here. There are ways of meditation people talk about, like really, really focusing on a small point and getting nimittas and things like that. In the Anapanasati Sutta, it really talks about a kind of whole-bodied, embodied breathing, which is more like pranayama, breathing through the body. That's what I like to do. I find at least highly focused practices where you're kind of really focusing on a thing, and my mind just gets too tight. I'm just finding it too tight. Or trying to imagine, like someone says you have to get a nimitta, and then I try to imagine something I don't even know what I'm supposed to imagine. And then I try to do it, and then, have I got it? Have I not got it? And I go to the teacher, have I got it? No, not yet. No, almost there. Yeah. Where's the self-reliance? Right? How can I adjudicate my own practice if I always have to, you know, some guy's telling me I have to get this thing called absorption or whatever you want. So I'm a victim to someone else's opinions. And Buddha didn't set it up like that. He set it up like you can be really self-sufficient with this. So be careful not, you know, you read stuff, and people do attain things, which is undeniable, but then they tell you have to get that. And it's very difficult, somebody says you have to get that, not to get caught in bhava tanha, in becoming, right? Very, very difficult. As soon as they say, you know, okay, now everyone, this meditation, I want you to get your toast. Because you won't be looking at the way things are. You'll be trying to get this thing, which I said you should be getting. It's very hard. So without denying that, you know, beings have profound experiences in meditation, you begin with the right understanding. It's like this. Right? So you can begin with your own experience rather than mine experience. It's great. And then I have no responsibility. It's your problem. And then from that, you can see. So what's happening? Well, my head's hitting the floor. Ah, all right. So I'm preoccupied with dullness. Okay, and that's what I have to work with, the hindrance of dullness. Or I just can't stay still. I just keep looking at the clock and fidgeting and moving around. I see. It's like this, restlessness. Okay, what do I do? What are the causes and conditions which could create a more peaceful state of mind if the present state of mind is restless? Or what are the causes and conditions that would create brightness if there's dullness? Right? So that's just intelligent, isn't it? You're just kind of working on your own craft. And you're doing it, not some idea of what you should be getting. And so on. So if you have what we try to develop in awareness practice, it's first of all good body awareness, as you all know. So if you do yoga or Alexander technique or Tai Chi or Qigong or jog or whatever, these are good things because you're in the body, aren't you? These are very helpful things. And then just to be able to witness the body is something that is a natural phenomena that is alive. And rather than the body as a concept, you want to get the body as an experience. It's different, isn't it? And that you do by just letting the body become conscious. That's the way I like to talk, right? I just say, let the feelings in your hands become conscious. So you wait, and then, there it is. Warm, tactile, right? And that's the way it is. It's like that. And then if you do that, and you can make conscious different parts of the body, you make conscious the breathing of the body. So now I'm not trying to, but what body breathing, where is that? And then you feel it somewhere, wherever. Oh yeah, that's body breathing. And all the time that this is in awareness, it's happening in awareness. There's this changing phenomena, natural. And then try to stay with that changing phenomena called breath. Feels like this. And then you might put in a bit of language. Breath, in breath feels like this. And out breath feels like this. Oh yeah, okay, so there's a cycle. One in and one out. And all the time I'm practicing right understanding. I understand that the breath, in breath feels like this, and I understand that the out breath feels like that. Right? Now do that for 45 minutes. And what happens? Well, you fall asleep. Or you start planning your vacation to New Zealand or wherever. Okay, so there's the challenge. And your challenge is not your neighbor's challenge. Each of us has our own challenge. So what do I need to do now to stay with the breath? Okay, I need to make some attention. My intention is to, okay, maybe each time I start to plan my trip to New Zealand in November, I'm going to notice the arising of that. And that's an intention which isn't a demand that I don't think about New Zealand. It's just I notice that my mind's patterns are thinking about New Zealand. And so, okay, that's what the mind wants to do now. I'll just notice the arising of that. And I won't notice the arising. I'll notice when I'm in it. Right? But by making the intention to notice it in some way, I'll probably notice when it's there, and I'll start to notice when it's not there because I've made the intention to notice that pattern. If I make the intention, now watch your breath and don't think, that won't work. You'll think more. You know, you do it for 3 breaths, and then the bell will ring, and you will have been in New Zealand for 40 minutes. That's how it works. I'm sorry. It's a design fault. So, but if you awaken to the type of narratives your mind is involved in, and you make that intention, I'm going to notice the narrative, the story. Oh, there it is. And as soon as you notice it, actually, it's ceased. And you're at the, there was, and this is the end of a narrative. Ah, then you start to see the space. And as you start to see space at the end of a narrative, you begin to see how it arises. And all the time, your anchoring point is one breath at a time. One breath at a time. That's all sort of very analytical, but it's actually not that much thought. It's just noticing. So you're cultivating the attitudes of non-distraction by being with the breath, or non-preoccupation all the time. And you're not becoming anything, you're just laying, you're making the causes for the mind to be peaceful. And this takes a lot of patience, right? A lot of patience. So then you feel frustrated, and the thought comes up, I'll never be able to meditate. And there's the end of that thought. I'm a hopeless meditator. And there's the end of that thought. So hopeless meditator is just a thought. It's not a reality. You can make it a reality by saying it again and again and again and again. Or you can see, this is what it feels like to be a hopeless meditator. And you're meditating, right? So the beauty of this, it's always returning to something that's always there, always possible, which is right understanding. Very simple. All right, so let's do some meditation, finally. Stretch your legs a bit if you'd like.